This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Everyone, I'm Nancy Jamieson. I'm the CEO of San Diego Grantmakers and one of the partners here in this event today. And I'm so pleased to have you here and so very pleased to have our speakers join with us. As David mentioned, San Diego Grantmakers is a network of engaged philanthropic organizations and individuals, many who have members are here today. We bring our members together to share ways to increase the impact of their community investments, identifying ways that philanthropy can combine forces with others to contribute to powerful social change in our region is part of the DNA of San Diego Grantmakers. We have a solid group of education funders, again, many of whom are here today and who will be talking afterwards about what all this means for us. And many of them were instigators of our partner today, the Education Synergy Alliance. I'm now pleased to introduce Sandra Timmons, who I first met as a fellow parent volunteer because our kids went to the same high school. And then we later connected again through San Diego Grantmakers as she and her husband became significant, strategic, and thoughtful local philanthropists. She is feisty and dedicated and passionate about making real change. We will hear a few words about her and why she believes that early childhood must be a philanthropic and civic priority here in our region. Sandra.
Thank you, Nancy. I think you figured out how to tame a feisty person, though. Put him up behind a microphone, you know. So I'm so pleased to be here today to share our experience as donors and to say how my husband and I have come to view support of early childhood initiatives as a major priority for our investments in the future. I've been on the board of the Education Synergy Alliance and a full-time participant of the P3 work that we have done since the beginning, and this event is truly a stepping stone in that journey. I want to thank our speakers who were really wonderful to come and speak with us today. I know they're in town for another event, and making time is really special. I have to tell you, though, that it's a bit strange for me to be up here as a quote-unquote philanthropist. It's not a role that we have publicly embraced, but thanks to my scientist husband, Rick Sandstrom, and his partner, Bob Akins, who took some smart ideas about lasers and turned them into one of our strongest technology companies, here I am. It's Cymer, by the way. Since Cymer went public, Rick and I have been in the very wonderful position of figuring out how to best invest to create a community that serves all of its people. We know that Cymer doesn't exist in a vacuum and that its success happened because of the community, state, and country in which we live. So some of our gifts that we have given back to the to organizations that supported our family as we developed. So we gave to the San Diego Children's Choir because my daughter sang. Girl Scouts because she was a Girl Scout. KPBS because who doesn't watch Sesame Street with their children? San Diego Zoo and our own local public schools, as Nancy pointed out. Another major commitment we've made is to UCSD because we are alumni and we owe our success to that education. And we also know that although ability is random, access is not, and that a college education really can change life. So scholarships are a big point of our giving. But we have a third category of gift giving that I strongly believe has the potential to make the biggest impact of all on our community, and that is early childhood care and education. I'm aware of the research of Professor Heckman and a few others. I've been watching it for years. For me, it's a case where science confirms instinct, common sense once again. Of course, we should be spending our money as early as possible in children's life to prevent future problems instead of trying to fix them later. We have wonderful organizations here in town that help children in need, but their success is measured by how many more children they help in need every year. So the more the children in need, the more successful they are. For me, success is a measure of how many children don't need help because they've gotten a healthy start. Investment in early education and care are powerful antidotes to poverty, as they pointed out. They not only help children build strong brain architectures and vocabulary and habits of learning and habits of heart, but they also enable parents to participate fully in our workforce and earn money to support their own families. When children don't get what they require, that is required for healthy growing brains during the first 5 years, then we all eventually pay through heavier tax burdens for the education, health, and criminal justice systems. Just this past week, the LA Times reported, in fact on Tuesday, that San Diegans spend $128,000 to care for one youth in 1 year in the juvenile justice system. That's an incredible expense that could be put earlier with greater return. As we've heard from the research, all later interventions from kindergarten through high school, from remedial education to healthcare to job readiness, not only are these far more expensive, but none of these efforts are going to fully make up for the lack of quality early care. I also want to share with you that even though I think this is the most powerful thing we can do, it's not the easiest. Thanks to the wealth of knowledge that we have, there are people who want to support early interventions but don't know where to start. That's why I was so encouraged by JB's report with the Bridgespan Group, Achieving Kindergarten Readiness for All of Our Children. The paper identifies specific proven investments that have been applied in communities all across the nation. Through my work with ESA, I've had a chance to, by myself to see some of these by going with local teams to the P3 Institute in Seattle and visiting communities in the Bay Area that are making early childhood a civic priority. San Mateo County, for example, has created the Big Lift, funded by the county and a community foundation, and they're building new preschool, summer, and literacy opportunities for children in that community. We also visited San Francisco, where a local tax fund is providing a range of supports for young children and their families. San Diego can and must build its own approach to supporting our youngest children, because maintaining the status quo is no longer okay. We are throwing away too much talent and too much brain power that we need to drive our community and our workforce, as Mark had said. I do see many philanthropists and business people in the audience here, and I want to invite you to join with us in this work. Rick and I are committing $100,000 to the Education Synergy Alliance for this year so that they can help all of us find the best ways to invest in P3 here in San Diego. And we'll be making larger commitments once these smart investments have been determined. But our capacity alone is not enough. I hope that you will work with us together so we can secure those larger, more substantial investments that are clearly needed. If we invest, people will invest in us. So please come to help and join with us to do this. We know that the upfront costs more than pay for themselves in better outcomes for our children and our society. And thanks to JB and the Bridgestone Group, we have strong blueprints to guide our investments. We've all seen the value of investing in prevention, in human capital and development. It's an investment that will pay off for San Diego, for California, and our entire nation. So I hope you will join us in this, and I thank you.
Thank you so much, Sandra, for your generosity and for sharing your story today. We are going to take the rest of the time to do some local reflection. So I'm going to invite up our panel, please. What we thought would be helpful at this point is to bring it home. So bring it home first with a little bit of data, and then bring it home with a panel of folks who can help us reflect on what it will take here in San Diego to engage, invest, and inspire our community to be alongside of us in the work on early education. So the first question that I think we need to think about is, what's coming out the back end? How well are we doing with the education of our youth? And if we look far at the far end, at really our ultimate objective, one way to think of it is that we want to prepare our young people to thrive in the world. And what we know from a study recently by Brookings is that about 65% of the jobs in the U.S. in the future are going to require some kind of degree or certificate. And luckily, the San Diego County Office of Education did analysis recently and asked, well, what percent of San Diego young people are acquiring such a degree? And unfortunately, the answer is only 26% as of 2014. So if you walk into a classroom of kindergartners or seventh graders or ninth graders in San Diego right now, you know that only about a quarter of those, one in four, 6 years after graduating from high school or 10 years from that moment in time if they're freshmen, are going to have the certificate or degree that they need to participate in our economy. But if we've learned anything this afternoon, we've learned that the remedy to that, while it's really important for us to build terrific high school programs, excellent transition programs to higher education, more communication among all the players in that field, we know that we need to look upstream. And so, unfortunately, we don't have data to tell you how many kids are ready for kindergarten, because in San Diego County, our school districts haven't deployed kindergarten readiness measures yet. But so at this point, we're able to look, though, at third grade. And what the Annie E. Casey Foundation, they sponsored research that documented that if in third grade you're behind your peers, and especially if you're a low-income student who's behind your peers in third grade, you're six times more likely to drop out before you even graduate from high school, let alone acquire one of those degrees or certificates that you're going to need to really fully participate in our economy. So how are we doing here in San Diego County? Well, we've got some room to grow, because low-income students here in our community, as of last spring, fewer than a third of them were actually performing at grade level on the new test that we deployed recently. And, of course, that's just one indicator, and we understand better and better and better after our time with our guests today that in order to change those numbers, while it's important for our elementary schools to do excellent teaching and have wonderful teachers there for all of our students, we really need to be looking at the early years in order to really dramatically change those results the way we need to. So looking again at the Heckman curve, Professor Heckman alluded to analysis that he thought localities should be able to do to think about, well, how do our investments in our children match up against the age ranges? And fortunately, the Education Synergy Alliance, with its P3 Salon, recently commissioned a report that enabled us to do that. We call it our funding and landscape scan, and it looked at the sources and uses of funding for early education in San Diego County. So here's what our curve looks like. It's the reverse. It's meager spending on the 0 to 2-year-olds, where we know the brain building is at its most intense. And we're investing a bit more for our preschoolers, even more recently with the addition of transitional kindergarten, and more after that. Now, this chart doesn't even include the juvenile justice system. It doesn't include health, but it captures a lot of our investments. And I'm afraid that if we added in more of our public expenditures, it would even make the curve steeper. So I think I'll stop there with my data. We have a lot of other information that helps us diagnose and understand what's happening now in our early education system so that we can better design and think about what the right next steps are. But I want to turn to our panel now, because the point of what we're excited about the opportunity today is to find out, does San Diego have the will and the excitement, the motivation, to see what we can do about early education in this community? And we've gathered some really terrific local folks to help us think about that question. So to my left, your right, is Margie Newman. Margie is both a communications expert, but she also has a deep background in early education. She did communications with the Pew Center for the States, and she also has clients in the early who are working on developing better early education in their own communities. But she's also the vice chair of the policy committee at the Chamber of Commerce here in San Diego, and so she has perspective from working with her business colleagues there. Omar Passens is the vice president, recently minted vice president of community development and policy at the Jacobs Center for Neighborhood Innovation. He is an attorney by training, but has now decided to channel his passions in a nonprofit way. Omar took advantage of an opportunity we were given by Ready Nation, a partner who's here with us today. Ready Nation helps to support business leaders and community leaders and people from the law enforcement world and military leaders as well to be strong champions for early education. Omar recently went to their global summit to hear from national and international speakers on that front, so he has perspective from that experience. And finally, Dr. Pradeep Gidwani is a pediatrician, and his role is with the American Academy of Pediatrics, where he coordinates a lot of the wonderful investments that our First Five here in San Diego makes to support our youngest children through home visiting efforts and also Healthy Development Center services, which does developmental screenings for a lot of young people in our community. It's a wonderful resource enabled by First Five, who's represented here today as well. So I'm going to open with Omar. So you've had a head start on this information today, and I wonder if you could share with our audience what were some of the things that have grabbed you about the kind of information that we heard today and that you heard when you went to the Global Summit?
Well, thank you. Before I was an attorney, I was a foster child in San Diego County to a mother who wasn't able to care for me. So this topic is really, really important because the head start you mentioned was the head start I got. And I went to the New York conference to focus on getting the legal community in San Diego County more engaged in this problem. But I have to tell you, probably the most powerful thing that I heard then or now came out of Ms. Timmons a moment ago when she said it's about early childhood education and care, right? Because at 0 to 3 in places like the Diamond District where I now work, there's a far larger proportion of young people than the rest of the county, and they're all getting their care, their daycare, their early childhood care in very small sort of informal settings. And so the point that she made is vitally important when you talk about sort of inclusion and equity across even San Diego County. So I thought that was very powerful, and I did get a chance to hear Dr. Heckman in New York, and was really stunned mostly by the number of things that were not academic in nature, but vital to the overall success of young people. He rattled off a list of things that were the socio-behavioral components that he discussed, and I was just really, really floored by that. It's changed my thinking since I've come back.
Thanks, Omar. Margie, could you open up for us some thinking and some experiences that you've had seeing how the business community, for example, or the philanthropic community, when they engage in other regions, what kind of difference can that make for early care and education?
Sure. Again, I'm a communicator, not a doctor, not a lawyer, certainly not a Nobel laureate. But it's been a joy in my career to help people like you who do this every day, who wake up every day and say, I'm going to better the lives of every child and every family, no matter what. Is it working? You know, how can you better communicate those things? Do you sometimes feel that you're doing everything you can do and no one's listening? I see people nodding. It's okay. That's why you got to get a coalition together, and you have to get the unusual suspects. So when you ask, and the question was asked earlier, what's working in the states? When I was at the Pew Charitable Trust working on this nationwide, we saw very specific things that worked in states, and that is when it wasn't the usual suspects. When you had people from your economic development groups, your workforce development groups, your sheriffs, your other members of law enforcement, CEOs, business leaders, people walking in to talk to policymakers that should not be there to talk about kids. Send your sheriff in with his gun to talk about 3- and 4-year-olds, and everyone stops to listen. You send a social worker in there, you send an academic in there, it's not as memorable. And so send those people in, but send them with the unusual messengers. That's one of the main things we saw that worked from our kind of national perch at Pew. And another thing that we saw that worked was message discipline. You have a lot to say. You do such good work. You do a lot of work. Don't tell me about all of that. I'm not going to remember it. A lot of people come to me if I'm a policymaker. Don't tell me all of that. Come in, one specific message, one specific ask. Make sure that your colleagues know what you're asking for and that you're working in coalition and you bring that unusual messenger in. Sometimes you may have spent so much time working on the message you forget who an effective messenger would be. The communities where we see that they're most successful, the states that are most successful, it's very disciplined and not the usual suspects working together.
And one of the things that I've noticed looking across the nation is that it's not also the usual states or cities that are mobilized around early education. Could you comment on how this has appeal in, you know, in all corners of our nation?
What has been really lovely, and I haven't been at Pew doing the home visitation work for about 3 years now because I've been in San Diego now. But when we first, at the Pew Charitable Trust, about 6 years ago now, they got a group of us together in D.C. and they said, we're going to start a nationwide push to get our highest quality home visitation in as many states as possible. Their focus at Pew, highest quality, so very expensive programs, for everyone. That was at first. And we thought, we're going to get such pushback. You know, Republicans are going to hate it because it's government intervention. You know, liberals are going to say, no, forget everyone. This is just about the poor. And we really were a little bit nervous. What we found is this, the 0 to 3, you walk in there, we had our Heckman curve. You know, we had JB's latest report. And we walked in, and to a person, when you presented the business case for this, and we kind of had to take the heart out a little bit. This was not about feeling good. This wasn't about, here's a family to tell you the story, although that's important. This was literally about the data and the people in our state and in our county that support this that you wouldn't think would. Those were every kind of person. And most effectively, the states and the counties that were successful had that heart, but they also had the data. You know, the federal government through the Affordable Care Act funded a lot of 0 to 3 work, a lot of home visitation. And it was based on tiers of rigor of evidence. And so we found people, Kentucky's HANDS program, for example, and now I'm going to forget what HANDS stood for, but you can Google it. But it was home visitation, and it's really great, and they didn't have the data. They could tell you, we have results. You could go talk to the families. They would tell you, we are doing so much better. But they didn't have, they couldn't give you a report with the data. And so the feds were like, we're not going to fund that. So you really do have to have, when you can walk in there with that data, you'll find policymakers, business community, and those fabulous, you know, tree-hugging liberals. Everybody gets around it when you have that. That was a piece that for some communities, Kentucky has it now, by the way. It just takes a while.
So, Pradeep, I'm not sure a pediatrician is an unusual suspect, but on the other hand, pediatricians maybe historically have stuck to their practices and not gotten out in front on big policy issues, and yet you have here in San Diego. So I'm wondering about your experience at San Diego's or at the local chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. You've done amazing work, and so how much is there left to do? You know, have you gotten it all done?
I think it's a wonderful question. Thank you. And I also point out that we're the American Academy of Pediatrics, not pediatricians. Most professional groups are focused on their profession. We do take care of our pediatricians, but pediatricians, by and large, tend to want to be in their communities. And so as a group, I have to say that pediatricians are really pretty amazing individuals. Some work in practices, some, like me, are theoretical pediatricians at this point, where I get to work on these large-scale projects, and I have to say that I feel like I'm the luckiest pediatrician in America because I'm in San Diego, and I've got to work with so many great people in our community. I have to point out that when you're thinking about what works and what we're doing, First Five in San Diego has been incredibly important in terms of strategy and investment. And as we get into what can we do locally, we need to build on that. We have an amazing partnership. I always say that we have intelligent funding because we have a conversation and a dialogue with our funders. Now, how are we doing? We have probably built the foundation. Okay, out here, I grew up in the Midwest, so the foundation is a basement. Here, it's a concrete slab. It's still very important to have that. If you doubled the money that we're investing through First Five, if we could get everybody to kind of piggyback on what's being built and add on to it, that's a place where I think we can make a big difference. It's planning, it's building relationships, it's a combination of things. That said, I think we're better off than a lot of other communities because of the efforts of a lot of people over a long period of time. That said, we're probably only covering about 10% of the kids that need the services that we're talking about. And when we're talking about families that have greater challenges, more trauma, more intergenerational trauma, what we actually need is a bigger, more concentrated investment. And we can figure that out because I really feel like we have been building the backbone and the skeleton of an amazing system. And one of the things about the program that you mentioned, Healthy Development Services, it actually treats kids. We do treatment. And that's the big piece where a lot of people around the country are talking about developmental screening. And we say, screening without treatment is really kind of unfair. Where are we going to put them? So I really have to applaud kind of an amazing partnership. And yes, we'll talk about the partnership between AAP and First Five San Diego, which is fantastic. But that partnership extends all the way into our subcontractors. And we have 22 subcontractors and contractors within HDS and just as many in our home visiting program. And it is truly an amazing effort. That said, we can go further and we can build this larger. But we really do have a real incredible head start here in San Diego.
That really shined through in our funding and landscape scan, the quality and focus of the work that we've done here. So I really want to echo that it's been intelligent investment with really wonderful partners and has built up our community. We have another special guest here, which is Camille Mabin, the statewide director of First Five California. Wave from the back, Camille. And I have to say that we're worried here locally, as I'm sure your affiliates are across the state, because First Five funding comes from a tobacco tax, and fortunately, fewer of us are smoking. Unfortunately, it puts the wonderful investments we've made through our First Five at significant risk over the five and beyond year time frame. So while doubling what we're doing would be the ideal, we also need to focus on preserving what we already have. Omar, I wonder, as I know you to be a keen observer of the political scene here in San Diego, I wonder what your thoughts are about how we might inspire political champions from among our elected officials locally.
You know, it's just a quick douse of cold water. The state of California has, I think it's about $750 billion in infrastructure deficit, right? Those of us locally know there's a big problem here, but that's a big number. And I start there to say that in San Diego, in our city, in our county, we have to look inward, right? We have to say we need to find ourselves our own education revolution for early childhood education and care. It's really vitally important. I've actually, over the last maybe 9 months, been talking with one council office about a way to start to do that. Because even at the city council level, right, there's lots of fights to be had once you get into the actual education system, right? Once you get into kindergarten and in some cases pre-K and certainly in high school and elementary school, there are territories to carve. There are sort of legislative hurdles. But when you look in that 0 to 2 to 3 space, right, it's basically open for city council members, for mayors, for boards of supervisors to say, and some of them are actually spending their time, taking research time, and thinking about how can we do more, how can we create policies that really actually do make a difference. There is no substitute for a greater investment by funders in the room, by our county government, by in terms of, you know, potential measures to really get the resources where we need them in this region, but a real meaningful early education and care revolution is really called for, and we need our electeds to lead in that way.
So I don't know if electeds will pay attention to grantmakers. I think they should, and I hope that they will. So I wonder what you might say, either Pradeep or Margie, about the role that grantmakers might be able to play in fomenting this revolution that we're looking at. I was just yesterday on a panel for a national conference with the early ed director for the San Francisco Unified School District, and she reported that really the work that she was doing was spurred and financially backed by a local foundation there, the Haas Junior Fund, a wonderful foundation, who went to San Francisco Unified's superintendent and said, "We care about this. We know you care about it too. Let's work together and see what we can get done." So what are your thoughts, just looking, you know, in your experience here in San Diego, about what philanthropy might be able to do to start sparking things up?
Yeah, I'll go. It's sort of an answer, what I have. To me, again, it goes back to who are they moved by? You know, if your target is a policymaker, who do they listen to? Who are they moved by? They're moved by people who vote, and they're moved by people who contribute to their campaigns. So if you are there and you're saying, look, I've got all of these really low-income moms, and they have the best story, and this is... I guarantee you those women are probably not going to vote. And that policymaker knows that, so they're going to listen. But the truth of the matter is, you need to take in people, take that story so they understand the heart, but then take in constituents. Take in the people who actually vote. Take in the people who actually contribute to their campaigns, the people that they really do need to listen to, because these are people who impact their world every day. So instead of taking the organization that gives you a lot of money, you could take their community relations person in from, I would name a company, but I don't want to get anybody in trouble, from a very large company. Don't take in the community relations gal. Take in the CEO. Mm-hmm. Because the community relations gal is supposed to give money away. The mom is supposed to be grateful for those services, or the aunt or the grandma. But the CEO of that company is not supposed to come in and talk to you about three-year-olds. So you've shocked the policymaker. They're going to listen to that person. You know, let's say a client of mine down on Pacific Highway, or Harbor Drive, I'm sorry, employs 250 people. And if the CEO of that company went to their local council member and said, I'm concerned, council member listens. Because that person employs 250 people. So again, you know, Laura had asked me, do you want to go speak at this this event in Sacramento? It's going to be testimony to some policymakers. And I was like, no, you do not want me at that. I talk for a living. I help people who do this great work for a living. Of course I'm supposed to feel this way. No one should listen to me except for you. I wouldn't be memorable. I wouldn't be effective. And it's just remembering that. So I feel like if you're going to get the voice of those folks, take people in who actually vote. Take people in who contribute or employ or move policy, because they really have no choice but to listen to those folks.
And then just building on the comments that both of you made, which I think are very important comments, we need to start saying that part of our infrastructure is our human capital. And so we need to phrase it with that and bring it together as a common vision for our region. And I think if you say, what can grant makers do? Grantmakers can really lead the conversation as it comes to what is our common vision, how far have we come, and how far do we need to go, and then also enlist the individuals that Margie's talking about, those people that are the folks that we really, you know, have clout, who when somebody who has 2,000 employees, 20,000 employees says, this is important to us, you'll see some more movement, but it has to be coordinated and it has to be multi-layered. I think we need to have CEOs, but I think we need grandparents. I think we need pediatricians, and we need parents. I think we need everybody coming to a common vision, and I think that's where grant makers can make a huge difference, and it amplifies the investment that they make and building on the investments that have worked. And I really appreciate your point about make sure that we retain what we have. First Five has been fantastic. I always say, hey, can we go after high fructose corn syrup as a tax? Because that's a public health issue. Fine, legalize marijuana so we can get the tax. But let's bring it back for our infrastructure and the quality of life. And I think this is a quality of life issue. It's our future. It's everything. And we know that relationships matter. And what we hear is this element of nurture. Nurture is the active form of love. And that is really what we're trying to do is bring people together to this vision of nurturing kids and families, helping parents develop skills, supporting parents. And one issue that we haven't talked about is parent mental health. Mental health issues for parents are big. And again, having that common vision of saying, what does our greater future together look like, I think is a wonderful way for grant makers to make the difference, is to help us have that vision and bring that vision for us as a community.
Laura, could I just add really quickly, coming from a community in the Diamond Neighborhoods that is a full 5 years younger than the rest of San Diego County, you know, every moment I'm thinking, how do I get the current teenagers' jobs, the current 20-somethings' jobs? But fast forward 5 years, right, if we've done 10 years, 20 years, if we've done nothing about the ages that you're talking about, that the Heckman Curve deals with, we'll be lost, right? And so it's just vitally, vitally important that we keep talking to our policymakers and the funders in our community about this issue.
Well, I think we might be some steps ahead if we keep giving you all the microphone. I do want to tell everybody, just share that we actually did a little poll on taxing high fructose corn syrup to support kids and families, and it polled very well in San Diego. So people, there are lots of taxes that didn't poll well, but people agree with you on that one. And so that I think near term, we have some work to do to digest and integrate what we learned today. Medium term, Connie's going to share with you some potential calls to action, ways that you personally might engage with this information. And long term, maybe we can get at some real change through new revenue sources and some serious political engagement and change. So thanks so much for your time. And I'm going to invite back up Connie Matsui, chair of the San Diego Foundation.
I don't know how many of you realize that this event came together in the course of about 3 weeks. Is that right? And there are many people here who were instrumental in pulling together to make this possible. But I think it's also a sign that the fact that all of you are here representing all aspects of our community is a sign that this is an issue, this is an opportunity whose time has come. So to help focus on what we can do as individuals, there's some suggestions here in terms of what each of us can do as individuals, as community partners, as leaders, as parents, to invest, to collaborate. Certainly to advocate, I think this, if nothing else, we can take that away. To spread the word about what you've learned today, what's inspired you. To work with business leaders on improving the workplace and the environment for families and parents. And as many of you already do, to volunteer to improve conditions. I also will call your attention to there are several actions and investment opportunities that are described in this booklet. JB didn't have a chance to talk about them in detail, but they really are worth reviewing and absorbing. So I hope after this event, you take the time to process what you've heard, to really reflect on the possible, and to make a commitment to work with each other, to make movement towards a revolution. What was your term? An early education and care revolution here in San Diego. We have advantages. We have a case. We have examples of excellent programs. We have a growing coalition. Hopefully, when you look back 5 years from now and say, do you remember that event we all went to? You'll have something, we'll all have something to show for it. And I think it sounds like we have the readiness, certainly, to mobilize on this topic. We have a growing clarity of message. What it sounds like we need to do is really harness the influence that each of us possesses to drive towards the change that we wish to see. So again, just incredible thanks to everybody who worked so hard to do this on short notice, and to all of you for the change that you will create in your communities and in your workplace. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.